Afternoon Drive with John Matham
on Cape Talk.
I didn't have a fascination with dinosaurs when I was a child, because when I was a child, there wasn't the information available that allowed me to develop a fascination with dinosaurs. So my fascination with dinosaurs kind of developed when my children were developing a fascination with dinosaurs. And I don't know whether Simon or Emma is either of them or both of them still interested in dinosaurs, but I am. And that fascination that I developed, 25, 30 years ago, is still very, very much with me. And so I'm sort of primed to pick up dinosaur news from around the world. So fascinated when I read on the BBC a couple of days ago that the remains of a scary prehistoric creature have been discovered in Argentina. This predator would have been the size of a bus and the height of a giraffe, and it would have had wings which measured 9 meters from one tip to the other. Its Latin name translates as the Dragon of Death. We're joined now by Professor Jonah Schwanier, who is a professor at Witz's Evolutionary Studies Institute. Jonah, good afternoon.
Afternoon, John. Thanks for having me.
How big is this in terms of flying dinosaurs, pterosaurs?
Yeah, it's big. This is among the biggest flying animals of all time. And there's sort of a number of contenders in this 9 to 10 meter wingspan group, which are called, they're all called Asdarchids. But it's certainly among the biggest ever discovered.
You try to imagine, you know, I'm picturing a bus, and I'm picturing a bus that extends to the height of a giraffe and then 9 meter wings. And I'm going, wow, this is big.
Yeah, it wasn't the weight of a bus. I think that's an important caveat there. It's hard to get a bus off the ground, you know, no matter how big the wingspan is. So it's an animal that's sort of the length of a bus, but you know, it's just beyond what you might be able to pick up, sort of, depending on how often you've been to the gym, sort of in the 250 to 350 kg territory.
Yeah, because I'm looking at a scientific illustration of it now, and you know, apart from the wings, its body's pretty puny, and then you get up to a rather scary looking head and beak.
Yeah, that's right. These things are these flying pterosaurs are thought to be analogs of something like a marabou stork or maybe a ground hornbill. So they're possibly flapping down somewhere and then stalking along the ground and chowing baby dinosaurs and eating carrion and that sort of thing.
And the weight of them, I mean, you know, we're talking about extrapolating from a far from complete skeleton, I understand, Jonah.
Yeah, this particular species is known from two partial skeletons. They have sort of the complete vertebral column of one, and they have some wing bones from another. And it's tough with these animals because just like birds today, these flying pterosaurs, they had quite hollow bones, very lightly built sort of bones. And so what happens is when they died, the bones were easily crushed. So it's very rare to find one so well preserved. And often, you know, many of the bones are missing. So we have to do some guesswork based on other members of their closely related group.
The project leader, Juan Leonardo Ortiz, told the BBC that the wingspan, and I'm quoting, defies the limits of our biological understanding. What does he mean by that, Jonah?
Well, this has been sort of a contentious issue in paleontology because the largest
one?
Yeah, it is a contentious subject, as you know. But, you know, this is job security arguing about this stuff, right? So the thing is today's largest flying bird is the corybustard, right? And a corybustard tips the scales at sort of 17 kilos. And so this animal is sort of an order of magnitude bigger than the corybustard. And in fact, when we find well-preserved ones, their wing shapes, they don't really resemble modern birds. It's clear they're flying in a slightly different way. And so people have built some 3D models of these things. They put these models in wind tunnels, and they've shown that they can generate enough lift to get them off the ground. But it's really unclear how they're getting off the ground in the first place. If they're launching from a cliff, if they're sprinting along until they get enough speed to get the wings out or something. And that's really, you know, sort of an unanswered question in paleontology right now.
Because I'm a very keen bird watcher, so I spend a lot of time looking at birds. And, for example, the saddle-billed stork, I mean, that quite often has to run a significant difference, flapping its wings before it gets enough lift to, you know, capture a thermal and then circle up. So this might have done something like that, but on a more significant scale.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think these are not animals that are engaging in active, heavy flapping, right? They're as soon as they get some lift, then they extend the wings and then just try to, you know, ride these rising air currents. I was in Sabi last year, and I happened to see a saddle-billed stork on a nest, and I thought, this is the closest to a pterodactyl I'm ever going to get in my life. I mean, it was just really impressive.
But I'm trying to sort of think of a saddle-billed stork and then think of this weightless bus.
Yeah, blotting out the sun.
Yeah, and thinking how many saddle-billed storks would go into one dragon of death. Quite a few.
Oh, yeah, probably in the order of 25 or so, at least in terms of the body mass. So it's really, I mean, it's staggering. And it's clear that this group of animals, evolved a way to fly that's really not been mimicked by living birds. So they certainly had some unique features of their anatomy, which set them apart.
And the illustration that I'm looking at doesn't have teeth. You know, it is a fairly sizable beak in a fairly sizable head with a fairly sizable tongue. So it and birds these days don't have tongues. So I mean, don't have teeth. So this is something that would have caught its prey and kind of swallowed it whole.
Yeah, I mean, I think a black-crowned heron or a gray heron would be a great analog for this, or a Goliath heron, if you will. You grab a frog, you grab a baby dinosaur, and you gulp it down as quickly as you can, and you let your digestive system sort of sort it out. But there are pterosaurs that have teeth. In fact, that group of flying reptiles in many ways mimics living birds in that there are filter feeders, which have many fine teeth, which are capturing particles. And there's ones that have, you know, serrated steak knife looking teeth. And we think that they were taking, slippery fish or amphibians or something like that. So there's a great diversity, but this group that includes all the big ones, they do seem to lose their teeth. And, I think that's why you get these, heron or hornbill analogy.
And in terms of where they are in the fossil record of the dinosaur period, are they towards the end of the dinosaur period, just prior to the meteorite, which is thought to have caused the dinosaur extinction? Where do they fit into that evolutionary timeline?
Well, the total group, so all of the, you know, pterodactyls in common terminology, but this total group, they go right to the end of the dinosaur era. So when T-Rex goes extinct, they go extinct too. But this particular animal, Thanatos dracon, lived about 85 million years ago. So it was sort of 20 million years before T-Rex's time.
And would it have had predators? Because, you know, the contemporary quarry bustards don't get taken out often, but they do get taken out by some of the wild feline predators and so on. So would this dragon of death have had predators?
Yeah, absolutely. That ecosystem where the fossils are from is pretty well known. And there's a whole diversity of predatory dinosaurs, which would have been, you know, much, much larger than this flying reptile. So it's possible if they were on the ground, if they were crouched around carrion or something, they could have been stalked and, you know, by the dinosaur equivalent of the caracal, and something like an abelisauroid. They're sort of a short-armed, short-faced bulldog of a dinosaurian predator.
I just, every time I have a conversation, Jonah, with somebody like you, I'm fascinated by how much you know about something which lived so long ago and which has left so little obvious evidence of where it lived and how it lived. But somehow you paleontologists managed to sort of piece together the scant evidence and make it sound incredibly real to us.
Oh, thanks. It's a great compliment. You know, if there were more dinosaurs, we'd know less about them, I guess. You have this funny thing where there's a lot of researchers and not a lot of fossils to go around. And so you end up diving quite deep into sort of every aspect of the extinct animals' physiology and anatomy and ecosystem.
I've really enjoyed the last few minutes. Thank you very, very much for making that possible. Professor Jonah Schwanier, who is a professor at the Witwatersrand Evolutionary Studies Institute.